are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is someone I met in a very unique way, and we were talking about it in the green room, and she says she often meets people in this manner. Lauren Harmon joins me, and we met at a funeral.
Yes, we did.
Come closer to your microphone. Just scooch in there. Get all the way up in that microphone.
All
there,
the way up.
There it is. Yeah, we met at, we actually were, it was a funeral for my dad's best friend's wife. My dad and Desi O'Neill had been friends since childhood. And Faye O'Neill had actually was someone that I had known since I was a little girl. And so it was interesting to kind of go someplace where I lost someone who was significant in my life and meet someone and become friends with someone new. It was there's something kind of beautiful about that.
Absolutely.
And we struck up a conversation and we become friends on Facebook. And you contacted me about something that's very important to you, about someone that was very important in your life and dear to you. So tell me a little bit about the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation.
Well, the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation is an organization that's here in Chicago, but it's a global foundation. And the foundation was started in 2000, and the mission of the foundation is to help find a treatment and a cure for pulmonary fibrosis, which is a rare, devastating lung disease. They fund research. They provide disease awareness, community intervention, and support, most importantly, support for patients and families that are dealing with the disease. And pulmonary fibrosis is a rare lung disease that my father was diagnosed with in 2010. I had never heard of pulmonary fibrosis. It was an arcane medical term when I first heard about it, and it ended up turning my world upside down.
And when your father was diagnosed, how did they explain it to him and to you? Were you with him?
I was not with him for the initial diagnosis, but I was at every doctor's appointment with him thereafter. My mom and I went to all of his appointments with him. My dad's name is Leo Harmon. And the symptoms that are most common at the onset of the disease are a dry hacking cough, shortness of breath, weight loss, and fatigue. And my dad had this dry, hacky cough probably for 6 months, and he was a guy that didn't go to doctors very often. And so we think that he probably was suffering from the disease for a little bit longer.
Well, and our dads, we have also Senator Don Harmon in the studio with us. Hey, Don.
Senator,
I can't, I have to call you Senator.
I can't
do it. I know that you, as a senator, and now also as a family member, of course, to someone who has dealt with pulmonary fibrosis, had either one of you heard of pulmonary fibrosis before this diagnosis?
If I had heard it, I didn't recall it because it hadn't touched our family until Uncle Leo was diagnosed with it.
And because I was going to say, our dads, I'm guessing, are of that generation of kind of, I'm tough, I don't need to bother with a doctor. And that's, it can be very, because you're always going to feel like, what if we'd gone sooner, right? There's always going to be that. But we also know that our dads are who they are, right? Or the family members. And that's a hard thing to let go of. And what I think you're doing, both of you, of bringing attention and awareness is helping families, you know, ease that to get in front of it. Right.
Absolutely. And Don lost his dad. Don's dad and my dad are brothers. And Don lost his dad when he was 10 years old. And so my dad was kind of the surrogate father for most of our extended family. And he played a big part in everyone's lives.
Right.
And it was just devastating. He was such a larger than life figure. And it was really hard to watch such a strong person slowly kind of disappear before you.
How long did he battle with pulmonary fibrosis?
He was diagnosed in 2010 and died in April of 2013. And that is about the life expectancy of a patient that's diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis is on average 3 years.
And had you now, because the reason I asked as a senator, because a lot of people come to you with different groups and organizations. Is this something that you are helping? I mean, I'm guessing as being a part of the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation is something that this is what we do when we lose somebody. We try to figure out ways to, at least many people, you know, now they're informed. They want to know how they can either be involved or make sure other people have information. Is that something that you're able to do as a senator?
Well, I wish that there were more we could do through the legislative process. What we can do is try to call attention to the disease and to heighten awareness. We've, the last couple of years, passed resolutions through the Senate recognizing September as Global Pulmonary Fibrosis Awareness Month.
And that is important because, as you mentioned, it's not even something that you had ever heard of. And the more people, because especially even if it's just when you get that information, when you're in the doctor's office or they're running tests and we want to rule this out or we suspect this, people can be armed. I mean, that's one of the things I think is important as a patient, as caregivers, is to feel like you are well equipped with what's out there. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
And what do you want people to know about the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation?
They're an amazing organization, and the thing that is so dear to my heart, and I discovered the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation and my dear friend Jennifer Bulander, who's here with us today, very late in my dad's diagnosis and his illness.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I like about the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation is most of the people involved with the organization, including the president and CEO, Patty Toomey, are involved with the organization because they have been affected by the disease. Most people that work there have lost a family mm-hmm. member to the disease. And the thing that has changed, I think, significantly over the years is social media.
Right.
When my dad was diagnosed, I didn't have a smartphone. I wasn't on Facebook. And I really had no way to connect with all the resources that are out there, especially through the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation. And that's what I think has changed significantly mm-hmm. just over the last couple of years, is the connection that people have through social media, especially Facebook. It's a very lonely, isolating disease. And it's interesting, although it's considered a rare disease, since my dad was diagnosed with it, I know just in the work that I do, 5 colleagues of mine at work have family members that are either battling the disease now or have lost their battle to the disease.
And you mentioned social media, and I think that is a great way for people to connect, to get more information. What are some of the social media places they can go? Do we have... Here, I'm going to turn your microphone on, Johnny. Jennifer, you didn't want to talk tonight.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Yes, the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation is on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
Twitter, and Instagram. You
okay.
can find us at PFFORG.
And I think that's important whether someone is battling it or suspects or, you know, because... I'll go ahead and be very upfront. We recorded a segment with Dr. David Lederer, who is the co-director of, how do you pronounce it?
Interstitial lung disease.
See, I can't pronounce it because I've only heard it twice today.
You're gonna have a mindset for it now.
say it again for me.
Interstitial lung disease.
Interstitial lung disease. And some of the things that I talked to him about that we'll hear in just a little bit are, what the symptoms are, what the risks are, and things like that. But what do you want people to know about finding out and being aware of pulmonary fibrosis?
Go to a doctor mm-hmm. if you have any of the symptoms that we discussed, and reach out if you are a patient or a caregiver. That's one thing that the disease, it doesn't just affect the patient. It's devastating to the family members and especially the caregivers. My mom was my dad's primary caregiver, and 2 weeks after he passed away, she suffered a massive stroke.
Oh.
And I truly believe that the stroke was caused by the stress of dealing with the illness. So it doesn't just affect patients, it affects family members. Until recently, when my dad was diagnosed, there was no treatment at all. There still is no cure. There are a few drugs that have just in the past year or so come on, been approved by the FDA, which does help. But I think reaching out, and Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation has support groups all over the country. There's a support group that I know of right now in the United Kingdom. My friend Maureen Ingle is a pulmonary fibrosis patient in just outside of London who's waiting for a lung transplant. And she's just got involved with a support group, and we've connected through, again, social media.
Yeah, and that has to be hard news to hear when you find out that the treatments are limited, that they haven't made as much progress when you first get that information, because we are so unfamiliar with the term pulmonary fibrosis. Here's something else. Tell us a little bit more about your dad, because you showed me his headshot and his resume as an actor. Where did your dad grow up?
My dad was a larger than life figure. So Don and I, Senator Don Harmon, Senator, our cousins, our fathers or brothers. Don lost his dad at an early age. Our dads were 6 siblings. They grew up on the west side of the city mm-hmm. in the Austin area. Went to Our Lady Help of Christians. Our dads went to St. Ignatius High School and Georgetown University.
Wow.
Came back to Chicago. Something that people might know about is the CYO, the Catholic Youth Organization, mm-hmm. is a sports organization that was actually started in the basement of our father's
what?
House on the west side. Our grandfather, Jim Harmon, Bishop Scheel, and Judge Campbell started the organization to keep kids off of the street by boxing, and it actually started in the basement.
Oh, that's remarkable.
On Iowa Street. And then my mom and dad met when they were about 15 in a talent show with Bob Newhart, who was in their group.
At St. Ignatius?
No, this was on the west side. This was on the west side.
Okay.
And Bob Newhart, everybody knows how that story went.
Sure.
My mom and dad used to laugh and say, everybody would say, oh, Bob, sit down, because he would do the same stand-up routine at every show they were at. And, of course, he went on and
sure.
is doing great things.
Yeah.
But my dad did continue his career as a local actor. He performed on theaters all over the city of Chicago, from the Court Theater at the University of Chicago, Shattered Globe,
wow.
Doug McDade, who is the director of Shattered Globe, dedicated a performance to my dad when he passed away. He performed at the Bailiwick. Starlight, candlelight, every light you can think of. He loved music, Broadway.
And crowds, audiences.
And crowds.
Yeah.
He loved to perform. He loved to entertain an audience.
Was he like that at home, too? Was when you were around him, Senator, that just liked to entertain and make people happy?
Always a storyteller.
Yeah.
And you couldn't pry him away from the piano at any holiday gathering. He'd sing mostly in key, not that the rest of the Harmons could keep up.
No, mostly off key, actually. My mom played the piano, and my dad would sing very off key.
Oh, really?
Which I'm amazed, because Senator Don Harmon and his son are real musicians. They have a band that they play in, and they just performed at Fitzgerald's on
uh-huh.
Thursday, and I was amazed.
I'm sorry I missed that.
I was amazed, actually, at the quality of their voices compared to my dad could not carry a tune as hard as he tried.
Well, those of us who can't sing, enjoy those who can. How long have you been a senator?
Finishing my 14th year, which is hard for me to believe.
Wow! And what did your uncle think about that? What did Uncle Leo think of you being a politician?
Well, I think he liked it.
Yeah,
and he was just a wonderful guy. And you know, there's a proud tradition of political observation in the family. I'm mm-hmm. the first one, I think, perhaps since
that stopped observing and
just
jumped in.
By our grandfather, who allegedly ran for alderman on the west side a million years ago, though I can find absolutely no documentation.
But he apparently didn't win.
Well, it would be perfectly consistent with the Harmon tradition of making up the family lore, so it works out well.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
My father was so proud of Don. He was so proud of him and all of our family members, but especially Don, because he has done some great things for the working on doing great things for the state.
I'm sure he's proud of you as well.
Very proud.
Look at the work you're doing. I mean, this is the thing. We always compare ourselves to others.
I'm fulfilling my promise to my dad. That was one of the last things I did before he died, was I promised him I would do whatever I could to help find a treatment and a cure. And that's why we're here today.
That's wonderful.
The silver lining.
We are talking to Laurette Harmon and Senator Don Harmon. And Jennifer, whose last name I don't have, she's helping us out with the social media. She's live tweeting, and I don't know if we're going to do Periscope, but we'll work on that during the next segment. We will be talking to Dr. David Lederer in just a little bit. Thank you so much for listening, Pretty Late. I am your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Well, this segment we're recording because we have Dr. Lederer on the line with us. And where are we calling you from? The East Coast?
Yeah, I'm in New York.
You are in New York. So again, thank you for your patience and for staying up a little late, even though I would have loved to have had you on live. We have so many great things to talk about with our other guests, but we really wanted to get the opportunity to talk to you. I know that you're a pulmonologist and the co-director of Interstitial. Am I saying that right? I know you tried helping me out with how to pronounce this word. Because when people get bad news and they hear something new, how do I pronounce this?
It's interstitial.
Interstitial lung disease. And this is a program at where is this program located?
I work at Columbia University Medical Center in New York City.
So my guess is that you guys are really trying to lead, or at least have a direct impact on the kind of research and information that people are getting. Can you tell us exactly what this is?
Of course. So there's a large family of lung diseases called interstitial lung disease, which you just mentioned, and that's a family of diseases that causes scarring or inflammation in the walls of the tiny little air sacs in the lung. And that scar tissue or inflammation makes it hard to breathe,
mm-hmm.
people get short of breath, and also makes it hard for oxygen to get into the bloodstream. And whenever oxygen levels drop in the bloodstream, people just feel awful and short of breath. Now, there are, you know, hundreds of different kinds of interstitial lung disease. When there's scarring buildup, we call it pulmonary fibrosis. There's still dozens of kinds of pulmonary fibrosis. And there's a lot of work now trying to develop new therapies for these diseases.
And what are the, some of the interstitial diseases that cause this? I mean, is this something like pneumonia can cause pulmonary fibrosis?
Well, in general, an infectious pneumonia, like we'd all think about it, a bacterial pneumonia or a viral pneumonia, generally does not lead to permanent scar tissue that's progressive over time. We do use the word pneumonia sometimes when we're referring to inflammatory or fibrotic diseases, and I think that's a source of confusion for patients. They might be told they have nonspecific interstitial pneumonia, and that's not really a bacterial pneumonia. That's one of the types of pulmonary fibrosis. And talking about the causes of these diseases, very commonly we cannot figure out the cause, no matter how hard we try. But probably about half the time we can nail down one or another cause. Sometimes the scar tissue develops as a reaction to a medication. Sometimes it develops in response to radiation treatment to the chest for malignancy. Sometimes people have autoimmune diseases like scleroderma or rheumatoid arthritis that can affect the lungs. And then most people have heard of asbestos or coal dust causing scarring in the lungs. So that would be another large family of the diseases.
And would that be separate from the kind of diseases that smoking can lead to?
It is thought to be separate from many of the other diseases that we're more familiar with, such as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, emphysema, and lung cancer, which are all tightly linked to smoking. And this is really a completely different family of diseases. Smoking can contribute to some types of pulmonary fibrosis, but it's a completely different family. There's probably, we estimate, well over 200,000 people living in the United States with some form of pulmonary fibrosis. So even though
really?
It's not so rare, most people haven't heard of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, is there a possibility that someone could have pulmonary fibrosis and not be aware?
No, that's actually quite common, and we're finding it more and more in the population. One study studied folks who had smoked, whether they had some other disease like COPD or not, and they did CAT scans on all these people. And over 10% of the smokers had some early evidence of scarring in their lungs. So, and most of those people didn't know they had any problem with the lungs at all. So there's a little bit of a silent epidemic of this disease going around. We're still trying to figure out how much of that early disease is really important, or should we just ignore it until people are short of breath and coughing all the time?
Well, when you mentioned short of breath and coughing, obviously that those are a couple of the symptoms, you know, but how does someone, I mean, you know, is it when they're just climbing a flight of stairs, when they're going for a walk and they are maybe a little short of breath than they used to be? Because people will write it off as I'm getting older or I need to work out more often. How can people sort of, you know, make sure that they are aware of their bodies when it comes to their respiratory health?
Yeah, well, I think you said it really well. Most people with pulmonary fibrosis develop either a very bothersome dry cough, and by dry, I mean really minimal or no sputum production. And the other classic symptom is shortness of breath during exertion that seems to get worse over the course of months or even years. Most people with pulmonary fibrosis are diagnosed with something else first. Sometimes it is that they're told that, well, you just need to lose weight, or you're just getting older, or you just need to exercise more. But also, we've had plenty of people who were told first they had asthma or COPD or it was their heart or some other medical problem, because doctors just don't think about pulmonary fibrosis when they think about the first four or five things on their list of possibilities when someone presents with shortness of breath or cough. So it tends to be diagnosed late.
And look, people will Google things, and now that they're learning more about pulmonary fibrosis, they have more information. Is it helpful to ask a doctor? I know that you've said I have asthma or possibly COPD or these other determinations that a doctor might have. As you said, they have a list of things they go through. Should a patient say, can you check for pulmonary fibrosis?
Well, it's certainly reasonable to bring it up. I will point out that most people who have problems breathing or who are coughing will not have pulmonary fibrosis.
Okay.
But there's actually a very simple test that the doctor can do to see if pulmonary fibrosis might be there, and that's simply to listen very, very carefully to the bottom edge of the lung and around the side when the doctor's listening to the patient's chest. And sometimes we can hear these little tiny sounds called crackles that are a pretty good sign of pulmonary fibrosis. We can see them in other conditions, people with heart problems, or people who are acutely ill with, for example, pneumonia can also have these crackly sounds in their lungs. But if there are crackles in the lungs in anyone who's short of breath or coughing, and if the crackles aren't going away, that's a good reason to start to think about pulmonary fibrosis as a possibility. So asking your doctor to listen for crackles, they might say, of course I'm listening for crackles, that's why I'm putting a stethoscope on your chest. But it's certainly worthwhile to bring it up.
And when someone does learn that they have been diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis, you've mentioned that there's scarring. I'm sure one of the first things a patient might ask is, well, how can I heal those scars? Will those go away? Or what is a treatment?
Yeah, so the bad news is that we don't have any treatments that make scar tissue go away. We do have some treatments that will help people feel better and live a healthier life, and generally those include exercise and, if indicated, the use of oxygen at home or when exerting oneself can be one of the best treatments we have, really helps people feel a lot better. For a few people, maybe about 1,000 people per year in the United States, they can undergo a lung transplant for pulmonary fibrosis, which can have really a dramatic effect. It can really essentially wipe out the disease. Of course, it gets replaced by a lot of complications from all the medications that a lung transplant patient has to take. And we do have two therapies now approved in the United States. They're approved 2 years ago this month, October 2014. Each of them slows down the progression of scar tissue. They're only indicated for one type of pulmonary fibrosis, which has a funny medical name, which is idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, and the abbreviation for that is IPF. And like I said, they slow down the progression, but they don't necessarily completely stop it from progressing. And there's really no evidence at all that these drugs reverse the disease process. So today we don't have a cure. We have some treatments that help people. We do have a long way to go. And I do want to point out there is a lot more information about this disease on the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation's website, which is pulmonaryfibrosis.org.
And that is great information to have. Again, I think that a well-informed patient, or even just everybody really knowing more about the respiratory health, because you've talked a little bit about the treatment and some possible causes. And you mentioned one of the things, to help feel better is some exercise. Are there also things people can do to prevent pulmonary fibrosis?
Oh, I would say the answer is definitely yes. In my experience, there are plenty of patients that I see in my office who, if they had known that there was something in their life that was triggering scar tissue, they could have gotten rid of it. And, you know, sometimes it is a rare medication effect like I talked about, but I see a lot of people who develop scar tissue because of prolonged exposure to mold in their home or in their workplace. In addition, I also see people who develop scarring in their lungs due to exposure to birds. Now, I don't mean birds that are just flying around outdoors, but birds in the home or pigeons in cages or coops. And I know this sounds awfully specific and kind of out of left field, but over and over and over, these are the two major preventable triggers of pulmonary fibrosis that I see in my practice. The other major factors around the country would be the occupational diseases like asbestos and coal working and a variety of others that are already well known, and people who are employed in those fields are already taking precautions. But if you're listening and you have water damage or mold in your home, I'd say go ahead and get rid of it. Take care of that before it causes a problem. Most people exposed to mold in their home will never develop pulmonary fibrosis, and why some people do is not known at all. It's awful to be a patient and find out that this was a preventable condition if you had gotten rid of the mold 3 or 5 or 10 years before. And we haven't really mentioned this, but pulmonary fibrosis is a progressive disease. And for most people with pulmonary fibrosis, eventually they will pass away from pulmonary fibrosis or from complications of their lung transplant procedure.
Well, we want to make sure that people are informed and have the resources available to know when they go into the doctor's office what to expect. If you are diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis, what your options are. And we want to thank Dr. Lederer again for joining us tonight. We look forward to speaking to you again. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I think we can help a lot of people in various ways. Would you mind if we called you again? And again, we can record. I won't keep you up late.
Yeah, of course, I'd be happy to anytime. Thanks for having me. Back.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely evening, and we will talk to you soon.
Wonderful. Thanks. Bye-bye.
More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late, and joining me in the studio is Senator Don Harmon and Laurette Harmon, who have been telling us stories about Leo and the battle that he faced with pulmonary fibrosis. Joining us on the line is Dave Sherry, who is also himself battling pulmonary fibrosis disorder. Is it a disorder, disease? Hey, Dave, what do you tell people as an ambassador for the Pulmonary Foundation?
Well, thank you first, and thank you for using your program to bring awareness to this disease. It's very much appreciated. Yes, it is a disease. As I was listening to Dr. Lederer's description of what pulmonary fibrosis is, and having been a patient myself for 10 years, it's something that his characterization of the disease is something I'm very familiar with. Exactly what he said. It's a scarring of the lungs. It's a progressive scarring of the lungs. And there's very, very little that really can be done to treat the disease. You know, Dr. Lederer mentioned oxygen therapy, exercise, and then for patients who have the diagnosis of idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, they are eligible to take these two drugs that were approved 2 years ago that help slow the progression of the disease.
And how long have you been battling pulmonary fibrosis?
Well, I was diagnosed about 10 years ago, 52 years old, in good health, never smoked, had a pretty bad chest cold, and the cold went away, but I had this cough that just wouldn't go away. And after several months, my wife, who happens to also be a nurse, said, "You've played with this cough too long. Go to the doctor." So I went to our family doctor. He took a chest X-ray. It showed some indications of interstitial lung disease. So new word for me. I had no idea what it meant. But that over the course of the succeeding months, I went to a pulmonologist. Went through a vast array of testing, ultimately had a lung biopsy done. Mm. And all during this time, I was being told about all of these different types of interstitial lung diseases, and my pulmonologist was listed them out for me on a piece of paper. And he said, "We're going to try to eliminate all of these diseases." And at the very bottom of that list, he had a disease called pulmonary fibrosis.
Wow.
And I remember exactly what he told me. He says, "We don't want it to be this disease."
Oh.
But ultimately, it was. And, I think Laura, said it real well earlier in your show. It just knocks you off your feet. It's literally a death sentence.
Wow, it's got to be such hard news to take. Dave, I forgot to ask, I may have asked, how long have you been battling pulmonary fibrosis? Because I know they've told me, and I can't remember if you told me.
Yeah, it's been just right at 10 years.
Wow. And you speak for a lot of groups and are sharing and spreading this information. What do you want to tell someone who has just been diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis?
Well, I think the most important thing is, it was the same advice that was given to me, and that was find a support group. And I was real fortunate. I live in the Seattle area, and there's a very, very strong support group that is sponsored by the University of Washington Medical Center here. And so I started attending that support group and very quickly found that it really was the best place for me to go, not only to get the emotional support, but also to get the education and learn more about my disease, how I can live with it. And that came primarily by the experience of other patients that have been living with this disease as well as the excellent educational opportunities that were provided by the clinic there at the University of Washington.
Well, I thank you so much for your time tonight. And I'm glad to know that you're in Seattle, because I don't feel like I'm keeping you up as late as I keep some of our guests up. We'd love to touch base with you again and learn more about your journey and talk to you about what you share with people. Is there any place you want to do you have a Twitter handle we can follow you and your journey?
I don't, and Jennifer will be the first one to say this. I am a social media deficient.
Have you tried Jennifer, to get him to jump on the Twitter bandwagon?
Well, of course.
That's fine, Dave, because you do a lot of great work and are helping a lot of people. And I also want to ask Laurette Harmon about an upcoming event that you want people to know about.
Oh, well, there's an annual event. It's been going on. Will this be the 7th or 8th year? It's actually in New York City, and it's hosted by Julie Halston, mm-hmm. who was known for her role in Sex and the City as Bitsy Von Muffling, and her husband Ralph Howard has pulmonary fibrosis. Mm-hmm. And she very kindly hosts an event every year. This year it's going to be on February 27th at the Edison Ballroom. It's on a Monday night when the theaters are dark, and she gets all of her Broadway friends to do a cabaret show. And the event has raised over $700,000 for the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation. And in addition to what Dave said, as far as support groups go, the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation has lots of support groups available through their patient communication center. You can go to pcc@pulmonaryfibrosis.org, and there's lots of information, resources, and support for patients and their family.
I want to thank you all so much for joining us. Dave, you get some rest now, will you? Because I kept you up. We'll talk.
Thank you again.
Oh, my pleasure. And we look forward to talking to you again. And Laurette, thank you so much. And Senator Harmon, I want everyone to know they can go to pulmonaryfibrosis.org for more information and follow them on Twitter. Yes, go ahead.
And I just would also like to give a shout out. Anyone in the Chicago area that's looking for an excellent resource, Dr. Imra Noth and his assistant, Kathy Brown, at the University of Chicago, were my dad's hope. They couldn't provide him much more than hope when he was battling his illness. Mm-hmm. But they did an absolutely amazing job.
There's no way to measure how important it is to maintain hope. That is a part of treatment, I think, and recovery and surviving and, you know, just dealing with it, whether it's the patient or the family. Thank you all so much.